on, actually, when, let's review quickly on 147 in the Hebrew and the English, it's 247. And the Mishnah that we read starts off with the law, the laws of the sota service of the accused adulteress, and then slips into the core question of women being taught the Torah, learning Torah. Page 147 in the Hebrew, 247. Okay, in Yesh Laskut, Haitatolela. If she was really guilty and she drank the cursed waters, the Nile and the Arlin, yes, there are instances as the Mishnah that she doesn't die immediately. Normally she should die immediately, but if she has credit points, take a page in the book. If she has credit points, then this credit would defer the punishment. Yes, there are instances where these credits can put off the death penalty, that is the heavenly death penalty, for a year. There's for a year, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. Okay? So therefore, there are instances in which a person is guilty, or where the person knows that she's guilty, and yet she doesn't die immediately, that her death is put off.
There's no way to cancel
out the punishment? The Mishnah, before she talked about the Mishnah, seems to imply that up to 3 years.
No more than that.
Yeah. But eventually, the truth will act.
But then if 3 years happen,
Because of what she goes through.
Right, this is possible.
If her stomach didn't stand, then whatever it is. She goes through all the same symptoms. Mikan Amar Ben Azar. Mikan. Okay? Because of this, from this place, from this instance, Ben Azai stated, Chayav Adam Lamamedet Bitotoha, a man is required to teach his daughter Torah, She'im Tishteh, Teda Shaschut Tolela. That if she should drink, and she really is guilty, she won't make light of the fact that she didn't die immediately. She'll know, Teda Shaschut Tolela, that she has credits that as a result are putting off the punishment. She won't be mezalzel in the fact that the Torah said that she would be punished, because she realized that because of her knowledge that she has credits. She has, now the Gemara asks what type of credits are we talking about. The Gemara says Torah learning credits, that she made sure that her children were educated, her husband was educated. Shaskut Tolela. Okay. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to finish the Mishnah, and then we'll analyze each one individually. Rabbi Eliezer says, he's diametrically opposed, but we'll see if maybe he's not that bad. Anyway, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanah says, HaMelamed et Bito Torah Melamdo Tiflut. A man who teaches his daughter Torah is effectively teaching her tiflut. Instead of teaching, now we saw two interpretations. Ask me what tiflut means. Either it means literally modesty, or it means silliness, lightheadedness, that her learning will not be serious. It will be without flavor. What tiflut means without flavor. Rabbi Yeshua Omer. Now this is new material that we haven't learned before. Rabbi Yeshua Omer. Now, Rabbi Yeshua is essentially making a, not relating to the issue of woman learning Torah per se, but is making a general statement about the women of his era. And he's saying as follows, Rabbi Yeshua Meir, Rotze isha bikav v'tiflut mitisha kavim u'plishut. A woman prefers one kav, which is a measure, it's a solid measure, Vitiflut and lewdness, and here I think it means sexuality, see a second. Mitishat davim from nine measures, ufrishut and abstinence. Okay, let's now look at the note at the bottom. 26. Okay, in here it's the note is 22 in English. 26 in English. Shnei pirushim ikariyim b'dvarav. What does he mean that a woman, as a general rule, prefers a kav and tifli? So he says there are two possible interpretations. Pirush lishon, kav echad shel mezonot v'tiflut ito. A woman would prefer not to be so often, not to be supported at a high level. They have only one measure of food. But to have her husband close by. Rabbeinu, see, look at, he says, Ken oled divrei Rabbeinu Chananel, she looked up at the Tosfot, and this is what Rabbeinu Chananel learned, and is quoted in the Tosfot, Rotze isha, she'ehei ba'ala chama, a woman would prefer that her husband is, transports, okay, this is equivalent to a local truck driver. He has his local masai, and he goes from place to place and he carries this. Okay, but what's the chamor? And it went for short distances. Matsuy etzla b'chol Shabbat, so that her husband would be back home every Shabbat, letet la onata, to be able to fulfill her ona, to fulfill her sexual needs, v'lo yavila el akav chitim l'bad. But because he doesn't travel great distances, and there are many more, the rate at which she gets paid is much cheaper rate. So their standard of living is lower. But she would rather have a lower standard of living, but have her husband nearby. Right? The lo yehi gamal, and she would prefer that he do that, rather be a gamal. Gamal is a camel driver who goes great distances in trade, who gets paid very, very well for his services. Sholech b'delcha chukka, goes a great distance, v'einu notem la'alona ela achat la'shloshi yom, but he may only be home once a month. Or, I mean, he may go for 30 days at a time, because he goes to great distances, and not be home. Right? So he won't be able to sleep with her, except in maybe periods of 30 days. Va'af al-pi she'mevila scharo pe'shekavon, even though per day he gets paid 9 times as much. She prefers having her husband close rather than having a higher standard of living. Zot amen. You go to this first interpretation. Isha madifa chaye ishut tibirim. A woman would prefer having a normal, regular married life. Al ramat chayim go rather than a high standard of living. Even so, they can be Roshashi, Rambam. There it is. And what's the thrust here? The thrust of this interpretation is that a woman prefers her pleasures rather than having a higher quality of life. That's what she prefers. Okay. Perushini, the second interpretation, which is a better interpretation as being continuum to what happened before. Perushini kav echad. She would prefer having one measure of wisdom, but have her sexual desires satisfied. That's other Menachem Meir's kav. Kav not meaning the quantity of food or support, but a kav of knowledge. She would prefer her husband wasn't such a scholar. That he only knows a little. What's necessary to lead a normal family life? Rather than he should have 9 portions of wisdom, because of his wisdom and his scholarship and his learning, he doesn't have much time to devote to his family. So she would prefer to have a husband that wasn't so intellectual, provided that her sexual needs are devoted. Zot amet isha madifa kirvat ba'ala al chachmato. She prefers for her husband to be close rather than her knowledge. Megamak divrei Rabbi Yeshua, what is the thrust of Rabbi Yeshua's comments? L'asher v'chazeki divrei Rabbi Elezer. This essentially would support Rabbi Elezer's position. Ein amin ha'ra'uy l'lameg benot Yisrael Torah. It is not proper to teach the daughters of Israel Torah. Ikar shivatan hi l'inyanei regesh v'pipa. They prefer having an emotional problem in their husband's ear rather than the harsh living or knowledge. Okay? I'm not here to judge whether he's right or wrong. I'm here to judge his position in this debate. Okay? I ask you to be patient. Now, and again, I very much believe that he's dealing with a general statement about the women of his society who are not educated, who are not sophisticated, who are very, very cloistered, and they had particular needs, and they would rather have their husband around rather than being a big businessman or being a big scholar. They want their husband to be. Now, why don't we just finish the Mishnah, just for the heck of it, because it's a very interesting Mishnah. It has nothing to do with the rest of the discussion, and then we'll begin analyzing the different positions. Who Hayomer, he would say, Chasid Shoteh, okay, a foolish, righteous individual. What's a Chasid Shoteh? Look at the note 27. Ra'atinot mevaveh ha'na'i, he says, a kid drowned in the river. Omer, he says, Shechlotz tefillin atzilenu, when I take off my tefillin, I'll save her. Right? Rasha'ah ra'ah isha, this next example is not successful. Ra'a isha tovad benahar. He sees a woman drowning in the river. I mean, lo nachom is tagil ba'atzibah. I shouldn't look at her and just say, that's a chassid shoteh. Right? He's not going to save her because we have to touch her and we have to look at her and this. And
no,
that.
But I saw a woman who I guess fell down, and I
question is whether she would, she could look.
Whether she could get up on her own?
Look, and she'd get up on her own without any terrible difficulty, or if she's really fat, you know, smack down and she needs help, you know, that's a chassid shoteh. Not the point of situation, you have to call it, but it's clear the halacha says that if somebody's hurt, you don't worry about it. And in fact, physical contact that is out to help somebody, it's not an affectionate contact, it's perfectly permissible halacha. And maybe a person falls down, you help the person up, that's not a physical contact with notice for bad. Not for bad, physical contact with bad, it's an expression of affection. Okay. In fact, in many ways, the halach is much more stupid to the husband and wife than the wife is mentioned. On the grounds that every contact is an affection of affection. Right? While with a strange woman, it's not affection. Theoretically permissible, it's maybe called the Gunes, proper, frowned upon, you know, but because of contact, but need of one for example, caused by the name of the chosen. Okay, next one. Rasha Arum. Rasha means when we look at 28. He's sly. He's a sly, wicked person. What does that mean? Look at note 28. Moret, Kulot La'atzmo. The chamurot lacherim. He makes his own clothes for himself for other people. It's very, very good. That's why he's sly. You know, he's a Russian. He's really a Russian. He's wicked. Matim dvarav lefnei hadayan. In another interpretation, matim dvarav lefnei hadayan kodem sheyavon ba'alvin chavirot. They'll argue this case in front of the judge before the other party is there. Try to get his argument in before the other party shows up. So he's not going to the judge. Isha pusha. The word pusha doesn't mean it means in a negative connotation. Sanctimonious, that's the proper interpretation of the word. She makes off that she's really righteous, but she's not. For instance, look at 29, no. Mal'iga, when she scoffs the divrei Torah, umit pa'eret shala atzma yeh marechet ha'rechim yoter nizgala. She says that she's more righteous than the Imahot war, you know, she's really a very, she mocks it, but she mocks it, the Torah. Okay. some about it. In the note that I put an hour ago, some say she's constantly praying, and some say she's constantly fasting, but she acts in a very secular expression. Okay. Let's go back to Mishnah. Umakot Ushi. These are people, this was a very interesting phenomenon. It's also known as the Crusaders, that they had a phenomenon like this. There were people going around beating themselves as an act of penance and righteousness. When they came to the cities, they would kill and lynch and rape these guys. So this is, again, this is sort of these people who are sanctimonious. Okay, another possible interpretation is they are so self-righteous that they don't look up, because they might see, you know, women or something like that, so they constantly hitting themselves in the wall. Because they walk into walls because they don't think they're going to go. So the Gemara makes fun of this sort of phenomenon. So you gotta be a man who lived in the world. Okay. These type of people essentially destroy the world with their fake piety. Okay. It's just the other things that he said. Kuwayome, this is the other things Rabbi Eliezer said about. It's not related to it. Okay, though. Let's now go back and let's try to understand. We have three positions here. One position is Ben Azai. Okay, let's try to understand. Ben Azai says a man is obligated to teach his daughter Torah. Okay, now let's. One of the fundamental questions that we have to ask ourselves, and which was asked at the end of last week, was what Torah are we talking about? There are two fundamental distinctions, there are two categories that we want to deal with. One is Torah Shebichtav, the Bible, text. The other one is Torah Shebal Peh, that's the oral interpretation. Okay, that's interpreted material that's not in the text. So let me ask you. Okay, let's figure it out. Let's reconstruct the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that a woman should learn Torah so that she'll know that there's such a concept as Zchut Toleh, and your father has to teach his daughter Torah. Okay. He has to teach his daughter Torah so that she'll know that Zchut is Toleh, so she won't make fun about it in case it happens to her, or she knows of a woman who was promiscuous, really promiscuous, and she knows that the woman really promiscuous, and she sees that the woman's got to be in front, she'll know not to make fun of the Torah, that there's a reason, there's this consequence for the Torah. Okay? So that's why Ben Azai says it's important for a woman to learn Torah. Question. What Torah is it talking about? The teacher Torah Shabbat? The teacher Torah Shabbat?
What?
What's about that?
That's right.
That's not in the text anymore. So Rabbi Azai is clearly stating that you teach your daughter Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaalpeh, because she's going to need to know this information. Okay. Now, there's one other argument that we have to deal with is: does Ben Azai mean that you should only teach them Sota? How much? What Torah Shebaalpeh should we teach them? Well, no, I mean, based on the text. Based on what the text. We can't amar, chayav adam lamed bitok Torah, she'im tishteh, tidash eschut Torah. What? You know, Torah Shabbat Peh, there is the Parsha Sota, which talks about, and you teach the Torah Shabbat Peh, Sota, eschut Torah, right?
But
isn't Habakkuk considered part of it? Yes, it is, but that's not, let's deal with the text, let's analyze the text. And from once we analyze the text, we can make all generalizations. Let's understand what the text is. So what is Ben Azai saying? What am I? I'm going to teach my daughter Torah Shabbat. Your analysis is correct. How much Torah Shabbat? What? So then, if that's correct, and there are those posting who say that Ben Azai is only saying you teach your Torah Shabbat because you got to something, then his words are wrong. What? Because. No, one could argue, and I misunderstood. What? Okay, I'll leave it to this one. If what she needs to know is schut toleh, should the father teach her? Schutale? So it should have said what? Mikana Mamazai, Kana Mamet Bito, Shaskutale. So she'll know that Schut is Tale. It doesn't say. He says what?
Schut is still a service.
What? Schut. Schut is still a service. I mean, at least that's what it would say. It's a service, Schut. And the Schut that she gets is not for her own money, but for her husband's and her children's money. That's the Schut that we're talking about. Right, and that's a bit problematic. Maybe we'll talk about that. But let's try to analyze it. Gemara says. The Gemara says, what is the Schut that's to left? The Gemara says, it's the Schut that she encourages her kids, she gets her kids to go to school, and that she encourages her husband to go to work.
But you're not telling
me. And not
be
right.
That
you shouldn't teach her that schut is kolet. So I said that doesn't make sense. I'm not saying that isn't a feasible position, but it doesn't make sense because then Ben Azai should have said that. But he doesn't say that. He says, Chayav Adam Lamed Bita Tova. Right? Teach your daughter Tova, which as you say, must mean Torah Shabbat. Right? She'im Tishtet, but then the second part doesn't make sense. Why do I have to teach her, you know, above a comma for, so that she'll know that schut is kolet?
So
that you'll have school. That's not the way the Gemara understands it. That would be interesting, but that's not what he says. It's not what he says. It's just Shim Tishtet Teidash Eschut Tolev. He'll know. She'll know. But it doesn't mean that because so she'll have schut, but rather that she'll know that schut works.
That's
not what it says. You understand the problem with the text? The text says, it would seem to imply that she should learn everything, or can learn everything, or the father can, but so that she'll know one thing. So but to resolve, yes? How, what is it?
It doesn't say anything about a minimum. It talks about a minimum that a father
is obligated. It doesn't say what that minimum is. He says, you teach her Torah so that she'll know that schut is tolet.
Teach her enough Torah so that she'll know.
See? It's very low. You'll teach her, you know, there's such a thing as a sota, schut tolet. So that I need Ben Azai, you think Ben Azai should have said, chai abadu melamed et bito sha schut tolet. That's not. Schut, the Gemara says, this credit, the Gemara Amala says, it's the credit she encourages those who are obligated to learn Torah to learn Torah. Okay. Let me just go back. I just began. We learned two weeks ago, that a woman is not obligated to learn Torah. Her father's not obligated to teach Torah. She's not obligated to teach her children Torah. She, when it comes to Torah, she has no obligations. She may be obligated to know how to function. She's got to know how to function. But she's not obligated to learn, sit down and learn Torah. She's obligated to know. Okay, that was point one we learned that. Number two we learned, this Mishnah, which dealt with other people teaching her Torah. She's not obligated, but can she learn Torah? So Ben Azai said, yes, you're obligated to teach your daughter Torah, so she'll learn that schut is kolet. And Rabbi Elazar says, no, don't teach her Torah, because teaching Torah has detrimental and have a detriment. She's not obligated, not only you shouldn't do it, because it will have detrimental outcome. So, let's analyze Ben Azai now. So we analyze, first thing we realize that Ben Azai says, teach your Torah, not and Torah Shabbat. Now, how do we understand this thing? So my suggestion is as follows. Ben Azai says, teach your Torah because there are benefits to be derived. She's not obligated. But I advise you as a father, teach your Torah because there are a lot of benefits to be accrued. One example is related to Sota. What's that example? teacher, so she'll know. As you teach her, she'll learn Torah. One of the benefits of the knowledge, she knows her Torah. That's one. That's only an example. Because he obviously held that there are benefits to be accrued from a woman learning Torah.
Why didn't he say
simple? He did. He said chayav. No. Mikan Amar ben Azar. From this particular Mishnah, that zchut is toleh, that there's such a concept, okay, zchut toleh, Ben Azar said, you know, this brings me to the realization that even though women are not obligated to learn Torah, the theory, they got to know how to practice, but the theory is valuable as well. Because, I'll give you an example. Here's a classic example. She'll know that zchut toleh, so she won't make fun, because she'll understand how the wahalak works.
What?
He doesn't say Ratsui or something like that. He says Chaya. Chaya, he felt it was obligation to prevent her from belittling Torah. Belittling Torah is an Avera. Prevent her from making Bambali is an Avera.
But then it's not what he thinks. He's
obligating the father. And he believes the father is obligated to teach her Torah so that she'll know how the halacha works. Because that has benefits as functioning. Look, one could argue, let me explain to you, one could well argue she's not having the power of teaching what she's got to know. But a need-to-know basis. But Isaac said, no, a need-to-know basis is not enough to be a good functioning Jew. Because if you don't understand the theory, if you don't understand the origin, what's Torah Shabbat all about? Torah Shabbat tells you what's the source. It gives you the theory, the background, what the framework in which the halacha comes. Not just a need-to-know basis. Knowing zchut toleh, does that maybe function any better? No. But it gives me an attitude to understand how the Torah works. So now I understand what framework. He says that. So he's trying to use this. That's why it's brought here in the Mishnah of Sota. Why? Because this is a frame. And Azai, Mikan, this is what stimulated Ben Azai to make this realization. He made the realization that even though a woman is not obligated to learn Torah, there are tremendous benefits as a functioning Jew to know how Torah works. By the way, this fundamental argument is a very modern argument about why it's important to function to understand Torah, even if it's not relevant. As you understand, get a picture of the morality of the Torah, get a picture of how the Torah views possession and views of one's commitment to God and his fellow person. So that is essentially what Ben Azai seems to make. There is, she will not gain any, she will not be able to know how to function is pretty good. I'm anticipating that. It's pretty clear that you can't function as a Jew unless you know. So the woman has to know, but that's only on a need to know basis. You never, you don't have to pass
it. He's going beyond that.
He's going, clearly going beyond it. And what made him realize? It's the when he saw the discussion, slipped on his, you know, you better start telling people about this. But our women got to know this too. And then he said, you know, if that's true by itself, that's a general concept. He's doing a general concept that a person has to, and needs the roots and the origins of Torah so that they won't think that it's stam happening, or that things are not functioning the way the Torah said. There's a Torah, there's an oral tradition that comes with it as well, which explains it. Clearly. Now, let's go back to now. Let's move on to Rabbi Eliezer. What does Rabbi Eliezer say? You, Ben Azai, have just said that even though a woman is not obligated to Torah, you really have to teach your daughter Torah. He says, I think that's a bad decision. That's a bad public policy decision. Because we have more to lose than to gain. Why? Says Rabbi Eliezer, Hapalamed et bitom Torah belamda tiflut. Okay, look at look at the handouts. What?
Who is Ben Azai as opposed to, where is he? Yeah, we talked
about that. It's a talmid of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer is talking about it. It's the Mishnah, okay? Now, so that's the source number two in the handout, okay? Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Kol ha-melamed et bita Torah, melam de tiflut. He teaches her Torah, teaches her in modesty, or teaches her Torah without meaning, without flavor. Tiflut, teaching Torah, teaching somebody Torah, is teaching them in modesty? Torah is in modesty. Tiflut, sabdaka, you think? Could you think such a thing? Ela ema ki'ilu melam de tiflut. It's like teaching them in modesty, or with this. Because that's going to be its outcome. It's effectively that. Torah is not first not that, but it will lead to this. I'm Rabbi Yavo. Comes Rabbi Yavo and tries to explain to the Gemara, my time is Rabbi Yehuda. What is the reason for Rabbi Yehuda? The chtiv, it's written in the Mishnah. Ani chachma shechanti oma. I am knowledge, or it means I am knowledgeable. Like you say, I need tefillah. What does I need tefillah? That means I'm a person of prayer. Doesn't mean I'm prayer. I'm a person. Ani chokma means I'm a person of wisdom. Shechanti orma, I dwell with slyness. That there is a slyness, a trickiness, a what we call a chacham and a fiddah. Right? There's a certain trickiness that comes from being wise. Kivan shenichnasa chokma ba'adam, notice it's male, not gender related, right? When wisdom is introduced to an individual, nichnasa amumit or amumiyut, he becomes tricky. Because he becomes smart, which comes. Okay, and that's, so what's that? And that related to kiilu malam da tiftut. Now, with that in the background, now last week we learned two interpretations of what the word tiflut means. One means lewdness. So Rashi has to say that tiflut means lewdness. How does that relate to this trickiness? So Rashi says, because she'll now learn Torah, she'll figure out all sorts of distinctions and how to do things in a tricky way. She'll think that she can outsmart the system. And therefore, she will, Rashi says, she'll do all the things it's in half. Okay?
So why is it true only of women?
Because it's a little
bit. A little knowledge.
It's a little. That's the problem. Yeah. The women, look, as I tried to point out last week, women were not obligated. Look, education as a public institution was very limited. Men weren't limited. It was a major problem. But the men were obligated to Torah, the women weren't obligated to Torah. You're dealing with a very poverty-stricken society. You're dealing with very limited facilities. So if a woman learned a little, it was that much. She learned a little. There were exceptional women who learned a lot. Yeah. If a woman learned, she learned a little. The men were obligated to Torah, so the fathers struggled to make sure their sons learned more. So they wouldn't stop. They would learn more, and then they'd begin to get legally wise and realize that there are distinctions and stuff like that. But a little bit of knowledge and you start making all sorts of extrapolations based on your knowledge and you're all up there. Okay, so the first interpretation says lewdness. The second interpretation says tiflut means without flavor. Again, you have a little bit of knowledge, you try to make all sorts of extrapolations, but it's all wrong because you don't have a framework. You haven't learned enough to be able to think properly and legally. So therefore you make your whole learning is a flavor. So he says, whatever the interpretation is, but you have more to lose in the game. She has to function to teach her, and I need to know this. She'll ask you a question. You'll answer the question. But to start getting her into all the fine points of the distinctions, that it's not worth it. Okay. Let me ask you a question. What about Rabbi Eliezer? Is he talking about Torah Shemitah or Torah Shemitah? I'm a lamed et bita Torah, malam de tiflut. One could argue that, he's talking about Torah, so he's coming in response, but it's not clear at all. could be, any position could be open. Rabbi Eliezer could be talking about Darshan, not about Darshan. Okay, from this text, you can't know.
What kind of people would you be learning from fellowship?
Okay, your argument, now using a logical argument, you're saying, look, this slyness and fine legal analysis, that comes from the Torah Shabbat Peh. Torah Shabbat Shabbat is Chumash, what have a different? All right, that you may very well be right. In fact, I'm sure you're right. But from the text, but I will have to prove it. I mean, on a logical basis, you say, but what difference can you get from Darsh from Torah? That's where the fine distinctions go. Right? The fine distinctions come when the Darsh of Alpes starts making distinctions between cases and you begin thinking, trying to categorize and conceptualize the Allah. That's where this slyness, this trickiness, and this fine points come in. Text itself is very seemingly simplistic without the Darsh of Alpes. So it doesn't logically make sense that it refers to Darsh of Alpes. You're right, but I have to prove it to you. Because the text itself doesn't require Rabbi Eliezer's position. Okay, let's move on to the next position. What about Rabbi Yeshua? Rabbi Yeshua has a very negative view of women in general, at least to their appreciation of scholarship. I think the second chapter is probably better because it makes sense. I think the pshat, they're talking about a kav of knowledge, that she would rather have her husband close rather than have him be a scholar, flows very nicely as a continuation of this discussion. Okay? That she doesn't, women don't have an appreciation for the value of knowledge. She's not willing to sacrifice, and her husband should be a scholar. Okay? An appreciation, by the way, this works out, if that's the interpretation, it works very nice for what the schut is. What is the schut that she gets? That the schut is stolen. It's the exact opposite. It's the fact that she does appreciate now. Her husband comes home at night after a long day of work and she pushes him out to the Beit Medrash. He says, you go out and learn, go to your shir. It's true I have to be here alone, but I value your knowledge. That's the schut tolet. So it says of Yeshua, women don't really appreciate it. There are women who do, that get schut, and that's why it's a special reward. But he has this generalization that the women, at least the women of his time, did not appreciate that. They weren't. Look, let me explain something to you. There's a general rule, a sociological rule. Something you never learn, you don't appreciate. And something you don't appreciate, you belittle. What? Or about something you've never been exposed to. It's generally not that. Is there somebody in your family who's a mathematician? Alright? That's a general phenomenon. By the way, it applies in the relationship of the game about appreciation for Jewish knowledge, and applies on a whole variety of how the masses treated Socrates, and there's a variety, it's a very well-known fact. Okay? You never been exposed to it, you don't appreciate the little. It's not important. It's not necessary. In any case, these women as a general were not exposed to knowledge. And they didn't appreciate its importance. They wanted a husband who could function as a good husband. But I'd rather have him around than sitting in the learning with them, but they made rush learning time. Can't compare them with 27 people. And we'll see the post and say this. Okay, we're talking about an era in which there's tremendous illiteracy. And I'm teaching this as if it's all the debate about public policy. I believe that that's exactly simple. The public policy debate about whether women should be taught Torah or not. And it starts off the premise because women are not obligated to. Yes? He was a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua.
Was Professor Tiffany? No.
So they're all very contemporaries of Rabbi Yeshua.
Yes.
Good point. I didn't think about that. You didn't think about it. No, that's an excellent book. You know what? I should try to do some other things. That's a very good point. Is that the whole basis has to do with it. But that's not a problem, but it's an interesting point. The Benazir would be saying about something that's not really relevant. Why should he, you know, these women would never see it sometimes going through the sons of service because their faith in the magicians is destroyed. That's a good point.
But then he's saying, teach you all the esoterica.
He would be saying teaching it because, I'm teaching you Ben Azai is that Sota is merely an example, right? It's the example that triggered Ben Azai to this realization that even things you don't need to know to act are important to your Ashkafic view of Torah. Okay, and Rabbi Eliezer says don't teach him because a little bit of knowledge is dangerous, and you'll have more to lose than to gain. And Rabbi Yeshua has a negative view about women's value of education, and he's actually strengthening Rabbi Eliezer. The question is, Rabbi Yeshua really strengthening Rabbi Eliezer? Let's assume that Rabbi Eliezer holds, like you said, Honi Torah Shebal Peh. That's a possibility, right? If one could well argue there's a three-way machlokes. Rabbi Nazar says, what? Teach him everything. Rabbi Eliezer says, no. Tiflis, but not in Torah Shebal Peh, because Torah Shebal Peh is the Tiflis. But Torah Shebal Peh, I didn't teach you, but that's not a problem of you know, the fine distinction. Rabbi Yeshua says, I don't trust him at all, and no appreciation for knowledge, nothing. Don't teach him anything. I don't know what our function, but when it comes to Torah, don't teach him that. That's one possibility of learning this machlokes. All right. All right. Let's now learn another piece of the discussion. Page 150. What are you calling me? Okay. Now, let's go to Allenson. The Mishnah is on page 150. And 251. I just want to bring something to attention, which I mentioned last week, and I think it's a very important point. Rabbi Eliezer says, Hamalabi Yadbita Toa and Malamba Tiflut, right? Doesn't say the word, the formulation that we would have expected to say, which is what? Asr Lalamba Yadbita Toa. And I think this is a very important point, because he is clearly reason-driven. The tiflut is what bothers him. The tiflut is his concern. That might explain, as you point out, that's why he makes the distinction between Torah Shebal Peh and Torah Shebal Peh. And it may explain that if we're in situations where we have no worry about tiflut, we would say there's nothing to worry about. Okay? And that we'll see is a thread that is pulled into the modern period, a very thick thread pulled into the modern period, where we now deal with women who are involved in higher education, of appreciation for learning, who are trained to think in distinction from what. Okay. Let's now go again to the Yerushalmi Ben Anza. Again, the Gemara now introduces another figure. Until now, we had Ben Azai, who said you're obligated to teach your daughter Torah. We had Rabbi Eliezer, who said that you don't teach your daughter Torah. There's a tiflut, and Rabbi Shua has a general distrust for women's appreciation of knowledge. Now, you're showing on page 150 in the Hebrew and 251 in the English. Ben Azai, the local Rabbi Reb Lezer ben Azariah. Okay. Lezer is like Eliezer. His name was Eliezer ben Azariah. It's not Eliezer ben Hokinus, it's a fourth individual, a fourth scholar, also, right? Eliezer ben Azariah. Gitani. Okay, now, Eliezer ben Azariah, do you remember the Haggadah, right? This is one of these are the figures that appear in the Haggadah, right? You have Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus. We're dealing with that same period. This is all in the Rabbi Akiva period. Ben Azai, who said, father has an obligation to teach his daughter Torah is not like the view, is not like the view of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. The Tanya, as we learned. Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka v'Rabbi Elazar chasma sheyu mahalchim miyavne l'lum. These two individuals, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka and Rabbi Elazar chasma, were walking along on the road from Yavna to the city of Lum. V'gbilu et Rabbi Yeshua b'Bekiyah. And they met Rabbi Yeshua in Bekiyah. Bekiyah is Bekiyah. You know, like Mapsut and Mapsut. Anybody know about the pronunciation? There's a very, Avshalom Kaur has a book, Yelpi Shemagrit, and he goes through all sorts of analysis of the Hebrew, some of the analysis of the Hebrew in Yerushalmi, how they pronounce words. Like, certain letters were dropped. Do you ever think, I mean, actually, this is a total, you ever wonder why Aza is translated in English as Gaza? Because when the Greeks came to land of Israel, which is around the time of the Rishani we were talking about, Aryan, there was a click in the Aryan, and they heard Aza is Gaza. What about why Shlomo translated as Solomon? Well, if you look in the Rishani,
Yeshua, with an embarrassment of time, Leo obviously was not in the basement.
Amru lo. So they said to him, Hakol talmidecha umeimecha neshutim. What are you asking us? Some Torah. What are you learning? He's asking, what did you learn today? So he says, we're all your students, and we drink from your water. You're asking us Torah. You should teach us Torah. Okay, they were very careful about his honor. They didn't answer. They were very careful about his honor. Amar, he said, I feel okay. All right, he would have answered. So he says, thank you for the compliment, guys, for answering the question. I feel okay. It's not possible that you learned Torah today and you didn't learn something new. Mi Shabbat, Shabbat Shem. Who was there this week? Remember, because there were 3 weeks on, 1 week off. So 3 weeks of Rigo Leos, he says, whose week was it this week? Amulah Rebbe Lezer Ben Azarias, Rebbe Lezer Ben Azarias. Umayya Pasha Torah, what was he teaching? Hakil, so he's learning Hakil, Pasha Hakil. Right, the words Pasha Hakil says, Hakil et ha'am ha'anashim ha'anashim ha'adah. Remember the Sukkot after the seventh year, they would have Hakel, okay, and they would do what? They would gather the whole nation into the Azarah, and the Kohen Gadol would take out Mishneh Torah, read sections from Devarim, to the all assembled there. Okay, ma hayta parashat, this is Hakel, et ha'am ha'anashim ha'adah. Uma amar, what did Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah say about this pasuk? Ho'il va'anashim, ba'imunot, since the men come to learn, listen carefully, va'anashim, va'ot, v'shmoa, va'atach, lamaba, so why do the children come? And the liten scha, scha, the mevi'ayam, give reward to their, those who bring them. There's what? There's a chinuch point here. They brought them there to appreciate the value of Torah. This is an en masse, hands-on, experiential experience of Klal Yisrael learning Torah. You bring your kids just to appreciate the importance of learning Torah. Okay? Amar lahem, so Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, Ein hadov yatom, this generation is not orphaned. Should Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah shall leave it up to them. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah dwells within them. This is Rabbi Yeshua. Okay? So Rabbi Yeshua seems to what? To agree with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Okay? Okay, let me just stop here. Let's just sort of remember who we're talking about. Rabbi Yeshua was the one who distrusted women, right? But he didn't appreciate women's learning, right? The important point here is what? The men come to learn. The women come to listen.
Okay, so what's the difference?
What's the difference? Learn means to understand, to go into it. The Shema means to answer, to listen, to get the general picture of what's going on.
But now
you
didn't the men sit about the children?
No, they all stood. There's no place for everybody to sit. That's the picture you saw when we talked about my pizza. So that was a Simchat Beit HaShemayvah. That wasn't by. They were all standing. There was a big bama, and the king stood instead of the big bama, and everybody standing around. Whether they stood separately or together is not clear. There's no discussion of the pizza there. And Rav Moshe Feinstein seems to assume that there wasn't a pizza there. But, all right, let's continue.
They were hearing the same thing?
They were hearing the same thing.
So
but they weren't there to study there. Patience. Let's finish. Let the wheels turn. And remember, this is the same Rabbi Yeshua that we saw before. Okay? Now it gets better. Matrona, a matron. This usually means what? An aristocratic woman. Right, aristocratic woman. Shala et Rabbi Elazar. She asked Rabbi Elazar, Elazar ben Azar. Mipnei ma chet achat. That's the missing the Aleph, right? But that's probably a right for Jubilee. Chet achat, the Masera Egel, vehein metimba shalosh mito. How come in the story of the Chet Egel we find that the people who sinned were punished with three different types of deaths? Look at 42. Okay? For those with English, That's no 33. The pasuk says, "Vayikach et ha'egel asher asu." Moshe took the egel, which they made. Vayisrof ba'esh. He burnt the egel in the fire. Vayitchon ad asher dak. And he ground it till it was fine. Vayazer apnei amayim. And he spread it on the water. Vayashkit b'nei Israel. And he gave b'nei Israel to drink. What does that sound like? Sota. Sound just like sota, right? The sota, you take the parsha of the guy with the sota and you spin it on the water and you give it to drink. Here they took the golden calf and stirred it on the sweet cake. So that sounds like sota, right? He wanted to trick them like sota. So that's one pasuk. I mean, there we go, there we go. Then the next pasuk says, Simu ish kava yerecho. He turned to the tribe of Levi and he said, put a sword on your loins. Vihirgu ishtachid, and kill your fellow Jews who worship the Egel. So there was clearly they killed him. And Gimel, Vayagaf Hashem Adam, and God brought a plague upon the people. So that's a third form of death. So she asked, how come? Okay, so she obviously had a little bit of knowledge, right? She asked a very good question. So he says, a woman's knowledge is in her weaving, her shuttle. Dichtiv, what does it say? This is a desk. It deals with a weaving tool. But I mean, what is it? He's not answering. He says, what are you asking this person? You don't need this type of knowledge information. Right? Tichtiv. How do I know that that's why how a woman is measured for sharpness? The Chok Isha Chachmat Lev V'yadeh Tavu. By the Mishkan, it says the wise women, the skilled women, did it weave with their hands. Amalo Horkanis Bano. So Horkanis' son said, Bishvil Shalom HaShiva Devarachah. And if you remember, Rabbi Elizabeth Azari was a Kohen. So his son, Hurkanah, said, Dad, you know, Bishvil Shalom HaShiva Devar Achad Min HaTorah, because you didn't want to tell him something about the reasons of the Torah, he bought it to me many, we have sustained a major financial loss. He bought it to me many, Shlosh Mil Kul Na'asel B'chol Shana. We lost that much to Rabbi Masot this year because she's going to be angry and she's not going to give it. She can give it to anybody she wants to. And she's not going to like us. Okay, so what does he say? Watch this. Amalek, Yisofu Divrei Torah, Vayisro Dilush. Make the Torah be burnt and not built. Now, Dan is fighting this. Okay? Now, just one second. Okay, let's now try to analyze the story of the Muslim and Azariah. And this last story. First of all, now, Rabbi Yeshua, what are they reading in the let's go back to Hakim. Okay, Rabbi Yeshua agrees with Elazar ben Azariah. Elazar ben Azariah says the women come to hear the reading of the Torah. They're not there to study the Torah. Now, read Hakim. What are we talking about? And yet, the Gemara did not want Rabbi Yeshua. Elazar ben Azariah, to whom Rabbi Yeshua agrees, right? He said, he says, they're not there to sit and learn. They just sort of get the general impression of what's going on. Almost get the summary statements to learn the halacha. They're not even there to learn it. They're interested in the listening, and which would seem a much more or less, they're not really learning the text, they're hearing the text. They're sort of getting a summary of what the text is talking about. The women only come to hear. So what would you say? Rabbi Yeshua would seem to say the women don't learn Torah Shebichtav either. Okay, so now we have, it really seems that we have, it seems that we have a three-way machloket, right? We have a three-way machloket. Rabbi Yeshua really holds the women don't learn anything. I mean, it's really set up. Ben Zoma, Ben Azayim, sorry, says you have to teach your daughter Torah Shabbat. Then we have Rabbi Eliezer says don't teach your daughter Shabbat. And Rabbi Yeshua, the extreme, says don't teach her anything. Nothing at all. Now look at this story. This story of Rabbi Eliezer. I made a mistake. Matona Shalat Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, this Rabbi Eliezer is the Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus. That's number two. Okay, remember we have three positions. So now we have Ben Zoma, we have Ben Azai, we have Rabbi Eliezer, and we have Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer ben Azai. Yeah, we've seen two of them. Now the story about the matron. Okay, he uses these very sharp words. Okay, when he says, "What is that story about?" Torah Shabbat Peh, Torah Shabbat Peh. Right? He says, "She says what? Why the three deaths and this is that Torah Shabbat Peh, Torah Shabbat
Peh?"
Well, it's Torah Shabbat, the subject, but the question that she's asking. She's an analysis of the text, and she's comparing three, and it's the reasons behind the text. That's Torah Shabbat Peh. That's not just reading the text, she's not comparing the understanding. It's not just explain the words. It's about analysis of three different texts, and the fish she's drinking is like Sota. This is the
That's
is
like
it. What?
That's different from
what Lishma. No. Lishma means that you don't even learn the text. You're just hearing. You're there for the experience. You're hearing the words, you're not learning the words. There's a fundamental difference in the words. Let me make my presentation, I'll come back to you. Because what you're essentially is a whole different, I'm giving you what I believe is the most coherent approach to this sugya. What you're hinting is that maybe Lumo means they learned it in depth, that's Torah Shabbat Peh. They just didn't read the thing. And Shema just means to Torah Shabbat Peh. It's possible, but it doesn't. Everything doesn't line up as smoothly as I'm going to analyze. Let's go back to this matron. This matron asking questions about parshanut ha-mikvah, about interpreting the text. It's not just words understanding the literal interpretation. It's going deep again. And there he said, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, "You suck fool. They should be burnt rather than giving it to the woman. I'd rather be burnt." So he's against, but he's talking about Torah Shabbat Peh. Not talking about Torah Shabbat. He didn't have an objection to her learning. He did say, "Why are you learning this parsha at all?" He said, "What do you need this information about the Greek and the death?" No. Okay. It's also as harif as Rabbi Eliezer's words are. Right? He didn't say the formulation that we would say. By the way, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azari was known as a real Kanai. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus was a real Kanai. He was actually put in Chivr. He was called Rabbi Eliezer Shamtai. He was put in Chivr because he would not budge from his positions. He was the forcefulness of his language is typical to Rabbi Eliezer. I mean, if he can say things, he'll say them as sharp as possible. Okay, and his position, he holds position very to the nth degree. So he is very, very strong though. So the strength of his language, I mean, as sharp as it is typical for a sharp language. But, again, as sharp as the language, he doesn't say, us for one to learn Torah. He just says, what? Well, there you go. This is more homiletical in the formulation. Listen. Chazal know how to forbid things. And the word is, asr. Don't do it. Nowhere have we heard, I'm not saying that he says, go ahead and do it. He's not. But he doesn't use a halachic formulation. Right?
And it's the answer supports that. Because the son.
You could have said it differently, but notice something. The story that's brought is not the whole story. The Yerushalmi goes on to say, let's see, do I have the Yerushalmi here? Yes. Look at three. The reason why I brought the handout, because Ellenson does not bring the rest of the Yerushalmi. Look at the Yerushalmi, well, starting from where number four is counted up, one, two, three. Three lines from the bottom, right above four, right? The end of three. Three lines from the end. Ukshiyatzita. Okay, we just finished recent Vayin Sula Mashim. Ukshiyatzita, when she left, Amrulam Tamidim, as Tamidim said, Rebbe, Nizal Dachita, you pushed her off. Lanu Mata Mashim, what's the answer? They didn't know the answer. And she asked a very good question. This is a question, this is clearly Tosha about that. This is not shot for text. This is an analysis which is much deeper. Lanu Mata Mashim. Rebbe Brachia, Rav Abba, Bar Kana, Mashem, Rebbe Eliezer, Kol Mishayim Lo Eidim, all those who had witnesses, the Hatzmano warning, Hayamet, Rebbe, that's where the Shem, the Yuanah, could kill them, because there were witnesses. Eidim, Velo Hatra, Hatraya, if there were witnesses, but no warning, so technically you couldn't kill them, Hayamim Daka Sota. They would be checked like a Sota, where God essentially did the punishment. Lo Eidim v'lo Hatreyam, if there are neither witnesses nor a warning, Hayamet Magifa, they would die in the plague. But it's clear from the end of the story that she asked an excellent question, and therefore she was, therefore he was considered to answer the question. Let me just finish up with a whole bunch of questions. Listen, we've said you learned the fundamental material. Now, I want to end up with a whole bunch of questions. Next week, we'll start reading the Rambam. The Rambam will there then just sort of open up the sukkah for us. And we'll ask more questions of the Rambam. And then we'll see how the poskim struggle with the Rambam. Okay? And then in about 2 weeks' time, we'll get to the modern period. Because the modern period is radically different. And we'll have to understand, but it's all based on this material. It's all reason-driven. It's all an analysis of the women, about women's understanding and knowledge, etc. The question we have to understand. If according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkabez, except for them, if women didn't learn Torah Shabbat, okay, how do we find women who were scholars, who were scholars? How to draw you? And if nobody could teach you what? You've already made the distinction between a father teaching and a brother teaching. Yeah, but there's only so much you can learn. At some point, if she's going to learn, she's going to know 300 halachot, the teaching that other family are coming. She couldn't have learned it all. Somewhere along the way, someone had to teach her. But you're right, there are some, maybe she was that brilliant that she could just hang around and pick it all up. So the question is, there were women like Yalta, who was the mother of Ravina, and then there was the wife of As and Bruria, and many other women throughout Jewish history, before the modern period, women who knew it. So they were tremendous scholars. Where did they get the information from? And there are all sorts of other instances, and we're going to read a few of them next week, but which the Gemara says, not a Chizkiyuna, everybody, all the kids, knew Hilchata. Where did they learn it from? How did they learn it? They didn't learn it. And it's very clear in other sugyot that women who the bottom line of the Torah Shabbat. Okay. How did women get information if they weren't able to learn Torah Shabbat? Okay. These type of questions, some of them we've already hinted to. We'll start learning with the Rambam, or we'll start learning from the Shulchan Aruch, the Poskim, and we'll look at